Hello and welcome to Publishing Insight, an interview podcast about working in publishing. Welcome to episode 2 of Publishing Insight. I'm Flavia, your host, and in this episode, I talk about working in children's editorial with Christine Modafferi, editorial assistant for children's nonfiction at Bloomsbury. We chatted on Skype about many things, including how she obtained her dream job, why she loves children's publishing so much, and where to look for the next big thing in children's nonfiction. Christine has also incredible advice to help you stand out during the recruiting process, so be prepared to take notes. Happy listening, and for any comments or feedback, you can write me an email or find me on Twitter at flamflam91, FLAM91. Christine Modafferi, who is the editorial assistant for children's nonfiction at Bloomsbury in London. So first of all, thank you very much for joining me on the Publishing Insight today, Christine. And my first question is, what does it entail to be an editorial assistant and what are your main tasks?
So if you're an editorial assistant, it will depend a lot on where you're working and what your job description is. There are editorial assistants who work more on the admin side, and then there are editorial assistants who work more on the creative side with layouts and on actual books. And then others that are basically PAs, so they're more organizing stuff for other people. My role is sort of a hybrid between all three of these things. So I work on, I basically support a team of about 5 people. 2 of them are editorial directors, and then the other 2 are editors. So I basically manage, I don't manage the schedules, but I help them stay on track with everything that they're doing. I work on all the admin on Biblio, which is our database for books. And I make sure that all of our information is up to date on there. I do a lot of copywriting for our team, so I mainly write back cover copy, and then I'll also be writing some of the copy that goes on Biblio, which then feeds out to Amazon and other online retailers. And then I manage the activity books list of the nonfiction team. So it's a very, very small list. It's not our main moneymaker, but it is great experience if you want to work in books and if you want to go more on the creative side with editorial. So I basically make sure that those are up to date, and I liaise with the authors and with the packagers, with the illustrators as well. I manage the covers for them. And so my job is a lot of stuff altogether. but I guess that, yes, and to answer your second question, so what the main tasks of an editorial assistant would be. Yeah, so it will depend on the job description. It will depend on who you're working for, and what your managers expect of you. But for me, it's mainly doing admin on Biblio, which is our database, and then I'll be working on the activity books list.
Yeah, that's all really interesting. I'm sure our audience will be really excited about it. And I'm sure they would like to know what has been your academic and career path so far, and how your previous experience have been helpful to your current position.
So I went sort of the traditional route with publishing. So I have an undergrad degree in English literature, as most people who work in publishing do. And then after that, I went on to do my master's in digital publishing at Brooks University, just like you. And I thought that I would be working in marketing. I was pretty much convinced that that was what I wanted to do. So I went on, while I was doing my master's, I did an internship with Topsta, which is an online book review and giveaway a website for children's books. And then at the same time, and that was online marketing. So it was mainly copywriting and social media managing. And then at the same time, I was doing another one-day week internship with eBree, and they're one of the main nonfiction publishers in the UK right now, part of PRH, Penguin Random House. And I was working one day a week for them in editorial. And what I was doing there was a lot of proofreading, mainly proofreading, a lot of researching. And because I was working for a smaller division of eBree, which is eBree Enterprises, and they basically contact a lot of companies that, so for example, Kraft or a shoe company or whatever, Royal Historic Palaces, and we would basically get in contact with them to create book collaborations. So it was a lot of researching, a lot of writing these sort of draft letters to pitch ideas to these companies, and then a lot of proofreading. So that actually was what really made me understand that actually editorial is what I wanted to do, and not marketing. I loved top stuff, but the part that I loved about it most was actually the writing. So that's when I said, oh, okay, I think I want to get into editorial. And editorial, as we all know, is a quite difficult bit of publishing to get into. It's not easy at all. There's a lot of competition, and most people that work in publishing either want to get into editorial or are already in editorial. Unless they absolutely love what they do, which can be possible. but that wasn't my case. I didn't get straight into editorial as I had hoped for. But I did get great experience with the metadata team at Penguin Random House. So basically, the way it worked for me was that I got an offer as a bibliographic assistant at Penguin Random House. So what I was doing, to make it sound a bit more easier, so people who don't know what bibliographic is, because it is a very Penguin Random House specific thing, I was basically doing most of the metadata for different divisions titles. So I was looking up on Biblio all classification codes, and making sure that all the metadata was up to date, making sure that it was complete, that it was sort of acceptable for Amazon and for Nielsen. So I was basically a metadata person, and I was really, really focused into getting into editorial at the time, and I also had a manager who was very supportive of that. And a big piece of advice that I would give is whoever gets into publishing and wants to then move into something else, be honest with whoever your manager is, tell them what you really want to do, and if there's anything that you want to improve or work on or any skills that you want to gain, because they will really help you. That's what they're for. They're your managers, so be honest with them. But anyway, I was really honest with my manager, and she was super supportive as well. And so she would let me, for example, take a 10-minute break from work to go meet someone who worked in editorial and talk to them about my CV and what skills I needed to get into editorial. And then I just kept on applying and applying and applying, and then one day, I got an offer from Bloomsbury for their children's nonfiction team, and I was very, very happy to get that. Children's was what I always wanted to do, so it was just sort of the right job that came at the right time, about a year and a half after I had joined. Well, not a year and a half, probably a year and a couple of months that I had joined the Biblio team. So that's sort of how it worked for me, but it's very different for whoever works in publishing. There will be people who get into publishing straight away, other people who work in different departments first, people who work in marketing first or production first that are more traditional bits of publishing. That's just the way it turned out for me.
Yeah, and congratulations, because you are so young and you already have so much experience across different divisions and departments. So that's really impressive. Talking about children's publishing, what does it make you so passionate about it, and what do you love the most about working in children's publishing?
Ooh. Well, actually, the other day, I was working on one of my activity books, and I was actually making arts and crafts, so I was basically building a little basket out of an A4 page paper. It was wonderful. Like, where else do you get to be paid for to do.
That's true. That's a good point.
So I think that's the bit that I like most. But it's also really fun because sometimes you get these little letters from children, and they'll be like, "Oh, I really like this book," or they'll say, "Oh, I spotted this mistake in your book," and then you have to send them other books to make them happy. But it's just so fulfilling. Besides the arts and crafts, that's the main thing.
Yeah, that's really great. I think children are always so enthusiastic about everything. So when they love something, they love it so much. And it's contagious, basically.
Oh my gosh, yes. I was at this author event last week for a CBeebies series. And it's called The Olibobs. And we're doing a book collaboration with them. And oh my gosh, there were super fans there. Like, they were so, so focused on it. They loved it. So engrossed. And then we were doing arts and crafts with them, of course, because apparently all I do is arts and crafts from what I'm saying here. But they just loved it, and they were so creative as well. So, like, you get the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is great.
Great. So children's nonfiction in particular is an area that has been characterized by a dramatic growth during the last years. Mm-hmm. So in your opinion, what are the main reasons of this success, and which direction is this sector going to take in the future?
I think it's growing. We were actually talking about this before, right before our podcast, and you were quite surprised to find out that Bloomsbury has a children's nonfiction team only since 2015, and that's not too long ago if you think about it. It's only 3 years now,
yeah.
So it's grown a lot, and clearly it's growing also because there are people who are investing more in it. So Bloomsbury, for example, created a whole division just for nonfiction, and the editors that work on that are very, very specialized in that. And you get people like Usborne, like you were mentioning before, that have done it for ages, and it's true. Activity books have always been around, and nonfiction has always been around, but we're thinking about it much more commercially now. And I mean, you can even just think about Fantastically Great Women Who Changed the World. That's one of our main titles. It's one of our best-selling titles, and it was the children's nonfiction best-selling title of 2017. And it's just, we're basically continuing to tell great stories, but it's not for education purposes. I mean, it can be, of course, and schools do use our books as well, but it's also just for the purpose of telling a really, really good story, and we're starting to see that more and more, and it's great. We were talking about the Silk Roads earlier, and that was one of Bloomsbury's adult nonfiction titles, one of bestsellers. And our team are now working on a children's edition of that, an illustrated edition, and it seems to be going great so far, and I think that a lot of people are catching on it, just because it was such a great success for adults, and you want to see that translate to children's as well. So we are taking a lot of example from adult nonfiction and what they've been doing. So catching up on trends, keeping an eye out for anything that's happening. So we have our eyes constantly on Instagram, constantly on YouTube, looking for what the next thing is. And of course, that's easier when you're paid to just do that, because you have the resources to do that. But it also means that we're thinking about it more creatively. We're thinking about what YouTubers we can catch on. Obviously, that's a trend that now seems to be going away, but still, we're looking for online presence and people who can really capture a young audience or who already have a young audience. So we're very, very, we're much more active online. And I think that's sort of driving this trend of nonfiction growth. It's people who are much more invested and involved in it, and also publishing houses who are investing more in it as a trade sort of industry, and not only as an educational one as it used to be. Mm. So yeah, I think that's it. Mainly a much bigger budget for nonfiction titles, people who are more specialized in that, and also looking at people who have done it successfully so far, and just keeping in mind that we want to tell really, really good stories that will interest children, regardless if it's nonfiction. I mean, it can be a true story, but also be really captivating. So that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, that's really interesting that the inspiration for nonfiction titles can come from everything, really. And also that all this investment that the publishers are doing in this area are paying off and are also appreciated by the market.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, the market is changing and you can never really predict what's going to happen, of course. But it also sometimes is about thinking, oh, what does the market really need right now? And how can we how can we create an interest around it? So that's good. I mean, with Fantastically Great Women, it was sort of a really fortunate time because there was a real need to talk about Fantastically Great Women, who changed the world. And that's exactly what Kate Pankhurst did. So that's really cool because we found that gap in the market. And for example, there isn't really much nonfiction picture book publishing going on at the moment. There's a lot of like, you know, sort of Silk Roads type for children that we're doing now, of course, illustrated. But there's a lot of activity books as well, arts and crafts books. That always falls under nonfiction. But there aren't very many picture books that are telling nonfiction stories. So one that we're working on at the moment that's coming out in June 2018, it's called Moth, and it's a beautiful story by Isabel Thomas, and it's illustrated by Daniel Agnes. And it's the story of the little peppered moth, which is one of Charles Darwin's examples of evolution. And we created this beautiful story around it. I mean, it obviously is a story, but we've embellished it with wonderful illustrations, and we've put it into this beautiful picture book package, which children will love, schools will love as well, because they'll be using them in their classes to explain what evolution is all about. And it's also really, really engrossing and such a beautiful story to tell. And I mean, it's that, just thinking about the small stories, anything that really has that feel-good factor that we can use and sort of transform it into something that people will cherish forever. And I think that's what Fantastically Great Women is doing and what us will be doing as well.
Yeah, that's really exciting, and I'm really curious to see where the market will go and like what will happen in this area, because it's really exciting also for us adults. So, yeah, I kind of wish I was a kid now and had all of this choice, actually, of nonfiction books, because I was a really curious little girl, and I think nonfiction books are really something amazing if you want to learn while having fun and while also enjoying a really nice story and a really nice book. So that's really incredible.
There weren't nonfiction picture books around when we were kids. People were just not thinking about it that way. I mean, the only books that I ever remember having were chapter books, and then, of course, the traditional picture books, but nothing nonfiction-y, unless it was, of course, for school. So it's good that people are now thinking about those as actual stories that can entertain as well. I'm sure it's always been around, and I haven't been in the industry that long, but yeah, it is exciting.
Yeah, definitely.
Direction it's taking.
So talking a little bit more about editorial, which advice would you give to someone who dreams of becoming an editorial assistant, and which are the most important skills that they need to develop?
Oh, well, I mean, for me, as I was saying before, and we talked about it, but for me, my experience was a bit different to what maybe some people who work in editorial's experience has been. So my first thing is do not be discouraged if you keep on getting no's, because it happens, it's life, just move on with it. What my best way of reacting to that and finding a way to not get discouraged about all of the no's that I was receiving, and I had quite a few, was creating an editorial journal. Now, I know that seems very anal, but it works. Basically, what I would do is, for any editorial assistant job that would come up, because as we were talking about before, like, every editorial assistant job is different. It all depends on what your manager wants, if it's more of an admin role, or if it's more of a creative role, or if it's more of a PA role, or something hybrid between all of these things. So my thing was, I had an editorial journal, I called it, and I made bullet points about all of the skills that I was noticing coming up in different job descriptions for editorial assistants. And I would keep a track of everything that I was applying for. so Excel spreadsheet, or even just put it in on my editorial journal. And whenever I finished up with that, and if I got to an interview stage or further than that, I would write down every single thing, every question that they asked me, everything I had written down, so I could just even just brainstorm about what I wanted to say. And it's always really good to have that description beforehand as well, the job description bullet points, because sometimes you won't have it written down. The job will not be online anymore, the job description, and you'll just feel like, oh my god, I can't remember what they wanted. And so you might go there not even knowing what you're going to prepare for, what you're going to say. So it can all be very, very nerve-wracking and anxiety-inducing. But if you have that editorial journal, it'll be like your safe place where you have all your notes about everything. But then, besides that, I mean, obviously a notebook is not going to save your life. So you also need to talk to people, get as many people as you can to read your CV. My main thing was I would write to anyone I knew who worked in editorial, and I would just be like, hey, do you have 10 minutes? Can we just grab coffee or tea? Even if you're working in another department, it's also a great way to meet new people as well. And like, I've made so many friends out of that, besides people who checked my CVs and helped me get into what I wanted to do. And it's also really good because everyone will tell you their different experience, and you'll be able to draw from that and bring that into your whatever you're bringing to the interview. And then my next thing is be prepared to have to present stuff. I mean, if you're getting to that third interview, for example. So for my job, I had two interviews. The first one was just basically going through my CV. And always be honest in your CV. Always have examples of what you've done, what you've achieved. Try to quantify rather than, quantify and qualify, of course, but quantify mainly. Give people the numbers that they need to have to be able to track how successful you've been so far. And also, don't lose the energy that you have in your first interview when you go for your second interview. A lot of people get really tired at the second stage, and they're just like, oh my god, how long is this going on? When is it going to end? And you don't have to lose that momentum, because people will notice that. Also, make sure that there aren't any mistakes in your CV. I know this is really, really basic, but people do make mistakes. And it's really embarrassing as well, because sometimes they'll be great candidates, but whoever's hiring will feel more comfortable hiring the person who didn't make the mistake in that CV. And then, so just try to get all of your ducks in a row before going to the interview. And then once you've gone to the interview, you have to obviously make sure that you have all your ducks in a row, but also that you do have the skills that they need. So one of the main things they want is someone who can be good at organizing stuff. So you have to be proactive. A lot of times they will be under deadlines, and you'll have to be the one to remind them that they are, because they won't remember. Your manager's in meetings all day, so you're the one that's going to be always at that computer with their schedules on hand. Make sure that you have examples to say how you've been good at organizing something. So, for example, in your case, Fabia, you have been doing two internships while you've been studying full-time. That is such a good example of how you can manage your time and also organize and get stuff done. So that's a great quality, for example. So anything that you've done so far where you've been multitasking or where you've had to organize something for someone else, that's great. I'll always be positive. A lot of people who are nice get ahead. I know that's another basic thing, but it's true. People will remember your personality, and sometimes you'll get a job offer, not because you're the perfect person for the job because you have all of the skills, but also because of your personality, and you have to click with the people that you work with. So just try to keep your energy levels high, try to be positive, and then my last thing I would probably say is get as many creative skills as you can under your belt. So if you're doing any copywriting, make sure that you have that on your CV. If you have organized any events, that's great too. A big role in my job is copywriting, and that was when I went to the interview, when they asked me, what is your question, I asked them, what is the main thing that you're looking for in someone who would get this job? And what they said was copywriting. That was their main thing. So also, when you go for an interview, another thing is always know what you want to ask them. It shows that you're not, like, going there without having any questions in your head, but it also shows that it's an interview for you as much as it is for them, and you are the one that has to also analyze that environment and see if you're the right fit for that, and if you would be happy there. Because at the end of the day, you don't have to accept the first job offer, and you have to really, really think about where you're working, because that's a place where you'll be growing and where you will possibly be staying for years. So you need to know that you're going to go to that job and be happy about it. So I would say think about the questions that you'll be asking. Don't lose your momentum when you go for a second interview or for a third interview. Be prepared. Ask people questions. Go to people who you know. Don't be afraid, because people in publishing are really nice, and they'll totally be up for going for a coffee or for some tea and to talk to you about their experience. And then ask someone to look at your CV. My CV and my cover letter for this job, an assistant editor at PRH looked at it for me. And, like, that was a guy that I didn't even know well. So I say just have anyone look at it as well and get their opinion. And they might butcher your CV completely and, like, change it. And another good piece of advice that someone gave me was put your achievements in your CV as well. So, for example, for each job in my CV, for each job that I've done so far, I have a bit where there's achievements and a bit with my tasks, so that people see what I've actually achieved and where I've, like, a star at that job, and then what I did day-to-day, so my tasks, my usual day-to-day tasks, but then they also get that extra, like, little bit that they can see what I've done that's been brilliant, and have that for everything that you've done in each job, because that also helps them read your CV and understand what, yeah.
Yeah, this
so
is
your question.
This is really precious advice. Thank you so much, really. This is really great. So I have one last question that I couldn't help asking, obviously. What are you currently reading at the moment, and what has been your favorite book of the year so far?
So I prepared for this one. I read quite a bit. The good thing about working in publishing is obviously the free books that you get. So what I'm currently reading at the moment is this amazing book by Sarah Crossan. She is an award-winning writer. She's won the Carnegie Medal. The particular thing about this writer is that she writes in verse. So it's a really nice way of reading fiction, but in verse. It's so good.
Wow.
So I'm reading that at the moment. I think that might become my favorite book
actually,
of the year, but...
Actually, I do love poetry, and I didn't know that something like that could exist,
so now
I have to check it out. Like,
I
absolutely.
I am so going to send this to you. You need to read it. It's so good.
Yeah.
She's great, and she's written a lot. She's written quite a lot, so you'd like her, I think. But yes, oh my gosh, so great. So, so good. And then, Piecing Me Together is my favorite book of the year. So this is Renee Watson's new title, and it's a beautiful, beautiful story about a girl who is coming of age and sort of figuring out herself, but it also is a reflection on race and having different opportunities compared to other people and what it means to be sort of in the middle of what you are becoming and what you come from. And it's such a nice way of telling the story, and it's a feeling that even if I don't come from her same background, from the main character's same background, don't have the same experiences as she does, I understand what she means so much, and that's the beauty of this book. So that's my favorite of the year.
Wow, thanks a lot. Thank you for all your career advice and your insight about working in children's publishing and in editorial in general. And it was really a pleasure to have you. And also thank you a lot for your bookish recommendations. So I will definitely check them out, because now I'm really curious about those titles.
Oh my gosh, yeah, you'll love it.
Yeah, so thank you very much for your time and for being on Publishing Insight. And I know you're also on Twitter, so I will leave in the description box your handle in case our audience would like to maybe ask you something more about your job.
Definitely. I'm open to any questions that anyone may have. I'm not very active on Twitter, but I will read.
Perfect.
Thank you so much, then.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's been really a pleasure.
Same for me.
all for episode 2 of Publishing Insight. I hope you've enjoyed listening to it and found it useful. If so, please subscribe and leave a review. Have a nice day, and I'll see you in the next one.